Welcome to the Blood Cancer Experience, a podcast by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. This podcast connects people affected by a blood cancer to resources that inform, support, educate, and empower. When it comes to cancer, it's hard to navigate the unknown, and there are no easy answers. We're here to bring you the information you need to help make sense of every step of the blood cancer experience. My name is Montana Skirka, and I will be your host for today's episode. As a survivor of childhood leukemia, I am passionate about guiding others on their health journey as an integrative wellness educator. I work with individuals of all ages, teaching yoga and meditation, leading wellness workshops, and podcasting, writing, and speaking out about the importance of a holistic approach to physical and mental health challenges. Today on the show, I am talking to Samantha Redsky. 12 years ago, at 23 years old, Samantha's life was changed forever. She was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Samantha underwent 6 sessions of chemotherapy and 18 sessions of radiation therapy. After treatment, she was officially in remission and has since dedicated her efforts to help those affected through the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada and as a cancer coach. Hi, Samantha. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Montana. How are you?
I'm great. I'm really honored that you're here with us. And I wanted to kind of hear a little bit about what your life was like at 23 years old at that time of diagnosis. I'm sure this was the last thing on your mind.
Yeah. So at 23, I wasn't really into anything yet. I wasn't going to school for a career decision. I wasn't really in a career decision. I mean, I was just kind of starting that decision on where I was going to go with my life. So, you know, I was kind of like most adolescents that were just, you know, living life and having fun.
Yeah. Just living your life. Totally. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us in our 20s, that's sort of what we're just figuring out who we are, right?
Right. Exactly. So when that diagnosis happened, it was about, I think, 6 or 7 weeks before my 24th birthday. And,
wow.
Yeah, it came out of left field. Like, obviously, anyone who gets a cancer diagnosis is not prepared for that. But yeah, it was just all of a sudden, like, I woke up really sick and I was like choking on a blood clot. And I called my boss that day, and I remember I was like, hey, so do I come to work now and then go to the hospital, or should I go to the hospital and then hopefully come to work? And his response was, do you want a ride? Like, yes, please. You know, so, yeah, it was pretty intense time at that time at life. Like, I was just, you know,
just
going
kind
about
of
the business.
Yeah. Just thrust into this new reality. And how did it hit you? How did it affect you when they told you?
So initially, like when I was brought into the hospital, I was, you know, like I was kind of actually told it was something to do with my heart. They weren't sure it was actually cancer. So for about 2 weeks, I was admitted into the hospital and doing all these biopsies and tests and whatnot. And when they finally came to me and they said, we think it's cancer, I was floored. You know, at that time, I didn't really know anything about cancer except for like lung cancer and heart cancer. I didn't really know anything else. And I only knew what Hollywood had glorified it as. And initially when you hear cancer, you think death and frailty and pain and scarring and all this like terrible, terrible stuff. So initially, like obviously I was like, cancer, like, no, that's not right. You know, and when they officially came back to me with the actual name, like the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and the type, my initial reaction was just, okay, what are we going to do about it? You know, I didn't really sit there and cry or get upset, or like, I didn't really have an emotion except for, let's figure this out. That's kind of how it was. I didn't have really any emotion, like any anger about it until about 3 years into remission. That's the first time that I actually felt really angry about my situation. But yeah, initially it was just like, okay, let's figure it out.
It almost sounds like you entered sort of survival mode, right? And like,
yeah,
element of shock as well.
I think because I knew that everyone else in my life was going to be more devastated than I was, per se. Like, I felt like I had to be in control of my emotions and the circumstances so that they didn't worry too much or freak out too much. You know, I was so worried about telling my mom, obviously, and my sister and my grandparents, and like we're really close family at that time in my life. And yeah, I kind of put on that brave face per se in the survival mode because I didn't want them to worry. And you know, my whole motto throughout the whole thing has always been, don't worry until I worry. And that's what I kept reminding everyone in my life, like friends, family, and all that. It was just, don't you dare worry until I start worrying, because until then, everything's going to be okay. You know?
It's really interesting. And it brings up a lot of points around how much a cancer diagnosis affects everyone in the environment. You know, it doesn't just affect the patient, and also points to kind of a burden sometimes that patients, I mean, I know that I personally can relate to that. I was so young, I was 7 when I was diagnosed, but
yeah,
sort of unconsciously, I turned on this smile and I wanted to be the most responsible, happy, you know, compliant, I guess, easy patient I could be, because I saw how devastated my parents and everyone around me were when they found out that I was diagnosed with this and when they were going through their own emotions. So I felt, for some reason, I took on that responsibility of being okay with it, and kind of very similar to you, which is really interesting. I think part of it is that we almost feel like to blame in a weird way, even though we never asked for this, right?
Right. Like, obviously, no patient ever wakes up and they're like, I'm going to have cancer today. Like, that's not a choice that we all make, but it happens. And, you know, for me at 23 years old, it was like, I had this image of what my life was supposed to be like. You know, it was supposed to be like, I'm going to get a job, and then I'm going to save money, and I'm going to get a house and do all these things. And now all of a sudden at 23, it's like, nope, you have to go back to that young age again where people have to take care of you. You can't do those things that you are supposed to do as an independent person. You know, like I had to rely on people for rides to and from treatment. I had to rely on people to buy groceries for me, to clean my house, even do simple things like laundry, you know, things that at 23, 24 years old, I absolutely should no way need any help doing as a physical capable person. So to have something that's debilitating you and you're not physically able to see it per se, it's really hard to mentally digest as well, right? So I think that's the other part, is that it adds to that burden even more, because you're like, well, now I have to even be more reliant and self-sufficient, because I'm already putting enough emotional stress on you. Now I'm going to ask you to do physical stress for me. You know, like that's difficult to comprehend. And I think for any cancer patient personally, you know, it's really hard no matter what age. And it's very sad that that's the emotion that a cancer patient has to kind of experience out of all things in their diagnosis.
Absolutely. And I think that you point to something that is specifically faced by, you know, people in this age group and adolescence and young adulthood who face something like a cancer diagnosis, because, you know, like we said at the beginning, your early 20s, like this is the time where you're seeking autonomy. You're trying to figure out who you are. You yearn for, like, you know, that ability to really fly. And then when you have to be put under, you know, when you're dependent on others again, it can feel so, again, it feels to me like it comes back to kind of almost like a shame that, again, we should never be experiencing, right?
Well, and I think too, just because like all your peers are doing all those things as well, right? And you're looking at them going, oh, they have this wonderful situation. Like, you know, my friends were getting apartments on their own and they were doing all these little things and, you know, they could just do it. And I couldn't. Like, I could barely function in the morning. Like, after all my chemo treatments, it was like a ritual. I would go home, I'd be exhausted, I would have a worse night ever. Then the next day I'd have to take like my prednisone and I'd have like all this fake false energy and I'd do dishes and then I'd be done for the rest of the day. You know, like I remember one specific day I had enough energy and there was like a Walmart across the street from where I lived. And I was like, I'm going to go on a walk today. I'm so excited. And I got across the street and I was just at the doors and I was like, I can't go any further. Like, I'm so done. And at 24, like, that's, if feels like, I hate to say the word pathetic, but it's, you know, that's what it feels like. You feel weak. You feel ashamed. You feel pathetic that you can't even accomplish just a simple walk across the street, you know? So it's sad that that comes with it, but you know, it's, I don't know how we change that.
I don't either, but I think talking about it is the first step, because I can really relate to so much of what you're saying. And I think that ultimately comparison in general is just not a good idea for any of us, but oh, yeah. We're comparing ourselves to peers when, I mean, like you said, it might be invisible, but we are fighting for our life every day. And what I see when I hear that story is a young woman who is strong enough to continue to try, you know, that like you walking to Walmart is like another person climbing Mount Everest. And like, mm-hmm. It's so brave to just be here. And to, I think it's just about us giving ourselves a little bit of self-compassion and a little bit of space and saying, I'm dealing with something that my peers aren't, and I can feel angry or sad or process these emotions. Maybe like you said, later on, like often we don't even have time to process them at that moment. But when I look back, I mean, at that time when I was 7 and 10, when I was like, didn't have any hair and was chubby, I was so ashamed, right? To be a young girl that looked like that. And now I'm like, I have to feel so much compassion for that little girl and recognize how strong she was, right?
Mm-hmm. I agree with that like 100%. Like, you know, at the time, like I lost all my hair, and obviously, you know, your skin goes through different colors, and you go through bloating, and then you go through like, you know, you're super thin and skinny, scary looking. And then, yeah, to think back now to then, I'm like, holy cow, like, who was that person? Like, how strong were you? Because some days I wish I had that strength back. I'll tell you.
I promise you do. And in 5 years, you'll look back now and be like, wow, she's pretty strong.
Absolutely.
It's just the way life works. It's really hard to recognize it in the moment, right?
Of course.
And we talked about, you mentioned peers and you'd mentioned family and the support that you received from them. And I wonder how your family and peers kind of reacted to your diagnosis and what you went through.
I mean, I'm going to cry. When I told my mom, I knew it was going to break her heart, but I wasn't prepared for the devastation and the end of world looks in her eyes, you know, when you break that news that you have cancer. And same with my younger sister, you know, she's 4.5 years younger than me. And she didn't really know how to comprehend anything. And unfortunately, it kind of drove a little wedge between us and our relationship. And I think for people who are not really involved in it, hearing that your sibling can separate because of something like that, they're like, why would that ever happen? You know, they're your family, but some people don't know how to take it. But, you know, a lot of people were devastated, and then a lot of people, like friend wise showed me their true colors, like who was really my actual friend and stuck around and who wasn't. And I think about it a lot. And I always am asking myself this, if I had an opportunity to go through it again, would I? And I absolutely would, because now all the relationships that I have are 100% genuine. They are nothing but positivity in my life. And it gave me strength to be able to officially recognize those relationships that are good and positive and beneficial for not just myself, but for others as well, right? It was a really difficult time to see their reactions and to feel their pain with describing the circumstances. Because the biggest thing is that you have no control over absolutely anything in a cancer diagnosis, regardless of where they are in a stage, right? So I was stage 4, progressive stage 5. So wow. Essentially, I shouldn't be here talking with you. Yeah. So, I mean, when you tell someone I have cancer, all we can do is just hope that our medical system is strong enough and capable enough of taking care of you, right? And you have to put 100% faith into that, whatever that faith might be. I think that's the biggest thing, is that as a cancer patient, we have absolutely no control over anything related to our diagnosis. And that's including relationships and your life and recovery. Like, the only thing you can actually physically control is how you're processing it, I guess, a little bit. Like, you can do certain activities and things to make you feel happy, but that's kind of about it, really. You know, like, did you feel like that with yours?
When I tell people, or when I talk about my experience or try and process it, sometimes I'll come across people and they'll say, like, I don't know how you went through it, or how you're still here, or how you're so strong. And sometimes I'm like, but what other, like, choice do you have? You know what I mean? Like, I didn't ask for this. But I think there's also some truth to it too. Like, I do think that there's an element where we have to choose to believe that life is worth living and continuing, and to see the gifts, you know? And it might take many, many years of processing and grieving, but there are experiences that leave people bitter the rest of their lives. And I did not want to be one of those people. And I worked and continue to work extremely hard to believe that life is good, no matter what the pain I've been through and I've seen in others, you know?
I agree 100%. Like, I think the best way for me to explain that was, like, I was in hospital for my first treatment, and the night before, it was like a terrible thunderstorm, and they put me in the hottest room ever in the cancer ward. Like, I swear, I lost like 10 pounds just sleeping in that room. But, you know, I was sitting on the ledge looking outside, and I was just like, holy cow, like, this is my life. This is the situation. This is what I'm going to go through. And yeah, it was a decision. It was like, I'm not going to let it control my life. I'm going to make that decision to just trust my doctors, trust my team, and move through it, you know? And yeah, it was like the best choice that I think I could have done for myself mentally. It really helped me in those really tough moments. Does that make sense?
It makes so much sense, right? And letting go of control is
right.
A really, really hard one. And saying, okay, this is what I do have control over, and this is what I don't have control over.
Exactly.
In this moment, pretty much nothing do I have control over. And another thing, just kind of going back to, again, that added burden of the relationships and how they shift. I'm not sure if people really understand that this is almost potentially, at least it was a part of it for me as well. This going through this experience affects your mental health, affects your physical health, obviously affects your relationships, right? And when you talked about your siblings, I thought back to, I mean, so I was 7, I had a sister that was 5, and I had a brother that was a newborn. Mm-hmm. And so me being a cancer patient and then survivor, and then, like, you know, it doesn't really ever completely end. Like, it is sort of always part of your story and part of your process. And for me, definitely part of my identity almost, right? Since I was so young. I spoke to my brother a few years ago. I hope that he's okay that I'm saying this, but he said to me, he was like, you know, there was a little bit of jealousy almost at the amount of attention that you received, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I didn't want that attention. I didn't want to be looked at as a patient, and I didn't want to be protected. But it does create all these strange dynamics. And then with the friends too, I mean, kids don't have no clue what you're talking about or what you're going through. And it's so isolating and so embarrassing. And then on the flip side of that, it's like you said, the relationships that are strong persevere. And that is also a gift, because I wouldn't want to have fake people around me.
Well, and it's hard too, right? Like, because, you know, same thing with my sister. I think because we're a little older, obviously it was a little different of a scenario. Like, there was no more, obviously, at-home attention that was a little shifted, but there was definitely some jealousy of the attention for sure. But the biggest thing is, like, I found with some friends, like, I had a friend genuinely tell me once, oh, you're cancer. It's always your cancer, your cancer, your cancer. Like, and I just looked at them and I was like, what would you like me to do? Just sit here and say nothing, you know? And that's when I realized that that person was not there for the benefit of me. They were there for their own selfish reasons, you know, and I just took a step back. But I had another person who was a really good, genuine friend of mine who did say the same thing, but they explained that, you know, it's really difficult for me to navigate our relationship because it's always about your cancer. And I don't want to take that away from you because I know I don't understand it, but I need you to understand where I am in this situation as well. And that to me was so incredible because it wasn't an attack on me about it. It was just, I really want to respect what you're going through, but I'm also hurting and I don't know how to bring it up without hurting you, you know? And that made me feel like that was a person who genuinely cared about us as a relationship, you know? And the guy I was seeing at the time, it was really weird with him too. Like, you know, he cared obviously, and I'm super and forever grateful for him in my life at that time. But you know, it's kind of the same thing. It's always about you. It's not about me. And we're so young, obviously. I've been asked by the doctors, like, you know, going through this treatment, you may or may not have children. And at 23 years old, 24 years old, you don't know if you're ready to have kids 100%. Like, you might have that idea, but you don't know. And to look at him and decide, well, do I want to have children with you now? I wasn't quite there yet, you know? So it was like, okay. And they told me if I wasn't ready to have them now, then I need to save eggs. And unfortunately, that's a very costly procedure. And I didn't have that kind of money sitting around. So it put me in a position where I just kind of had to leave that all up to the universe, you know, to make that decision for me if I'm going to or not. So yeah, it's a really, really profound situation that it affects everything. And you don't know any of that until you experience it. And that's why I think it's really important that we always talk about it, for sure, because it's spreading that awareness. And I feel like the more awareness that we have about it, the less taboo feeling it'll have, right? And everyone can just be open and express these things, and people will understand that it's okay to have these conversations, right? So I definitely know that some people are not as open or comfortable discussing these things, and I absolutely respect that. We all digest things differently, but I think we need to do it for those people who are not affected by it, so that there can be some level of understanding that John at work, his brother's been diagnosed with cancer. Well, it's your brother, it's not you. Why does that affect you other than the fact that it's your brother? Well, you don't know the levels that it has reached that person, right? So I think that's where the discussions are a really wonderful thing.
If you are a caregiver or a friend and you feel affected by this, like, you should also seek your supports so that it doesn't come out. And then I just think what I've had to learn, and I've even had a therapist tell me once, he's like, not everyone has the ability to be as empathetic as other people. It's just the way it is. They Yes. literally cannot imagine being in your situation, because it's like you'll just go crazy being like, how on earth could someone say that to you? It's insane, right? And just sometimes we have to say, okay, I mean, I don't know what to say. Hopefully nothing like that happens to that person. And I think what you're saying is so important, because like you said, it was pretty much the same experience that two of your friends had, but one was open with you and honest and came to you with empathy and just presented how they felt, because maybe they felt, I had friends too. They're like, I don't know if can I talk to you about my issue dating if you're in a hospital bed? Like, and I'm like, yes, please. Like, that is exactly what I want you to tell me. Like, I don't want this to only be about me. I want to forget. I want to feel normal, or whatever that means, you know, in that moment. So
100%, 100%. Yeah, I agree.
It's just open communication. Yeah.
And I think people too forget, like, even though we have a cancer diagnosis, doesn't mean that, you know, the rest of the world's on pause, right? Like,
yeah,
we do appreciate that everyone else has their own life going on, and we would like to be a part of it. So if we can't physically be there, at least bring the drama to us a little bit, right? Like, daytime TV gets boring, everyone. Share your stories. It's okay.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's just, some people are able to handle it and some people aren't. And for me, it took a lot of time, of years of processing and forgiveness and understanding and anger. And that process continues to this present day.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that, you know, getting diagnosed set off the checklists of what I want with my life, right? And, you know, being forced with the decision of if you may or may not be able to ever have children, is that something you want? And when they told me that I may not have children because there's a possibility that the chemo could take that away from me, I immediately was kind of like, that's my choice, not yours. Like, you don't get to tell me that. And then I was like, okay, yeah, I want kids, you know? So it forced me to recognize what I exactly wanted from life, and kids being one of them.
Something like a diagnosis of a potentially terminal illness, certainly it can bring our priorities to the forefront of questions of meaning, questions of what we want out of life,
right?
Questions that maybe we wouldn't have thought of, or we would have waited several decades more to think of. It just brings everything so clear, or it can, right? Where it's like, okay, well, this life thing is not going to be forever, clearly.
Right.
You know, so what do I want out of it?
Did you find, like, being so young and diagnosed, did you find that when you were finally out of your treatments and everything, did you notice that you had priority shifts, or were you just kind of all of a sudden still just being a kid and going forward?
I think a lot about those years, and essentially, while I was going through chemo, I was still going to school to some extent, and the teachers kind of, and my parents worked hard together to make sure that I was keeping up with my peers and all of that. School was always something that was really important to me. And, you know, you kind of want to feel normal and fit in with everyone, which again was like a really big struggle. And I think a big part of that was like going from being on the 8th floor of Sick Kids Hospital, getting my chemo treatment, and just being exposed to children and parents that were going through this process, and the emotions that brings up, the like existential feeling of sitting with a mom and her baby crying, sitting with a boy in a hospital bed, like really just even maybe not even completely intellectually understanding what's going on, but knowing like this is serious and this is real life, you know? And this is what could potentially happen. And then being kind of shuttled right back to school, where it's almost like you're going from Mars to Venus. Like it's two different worlds, and it's a world that your peers, you're happy that they don't understand, but you know, like, so then you're like, oh, and then everyone's worried about who likes who and the marks that they're getting. And I think just what was important was always so confusing to me, because I felt like I saw something and understood something, but I also so badly wanted to fit in with my peers. And that kind of played in with, for me, when I was going through treatment and I started gaining weight, and I thought that that was very, very bad and was very different than my peers. And I actually went through like, and I started to experience an eating disorder after my chemo treatment. And I think part of that was just the shame of my body. And I think another,
I get that 100%. Like, so when I first went into the hospital, you know, I weighed 112 pounds or something, like ridiculously low. And when I got out of treatment, I was much heavier, like around my normal weight. And then once finally all my treatments were complete, then my body started doing like this yo-yo thing. Like I put weight on, I lose weight, I put weight on, I lose weight. And it just never seemed to kind of balance out. And then finally, when it did balance out, it was like a little higher than it should have been. And same sort of thing. Like it just unfortunately made me very self-conscious about myself. And looking back on it, I don't know if you feel the same way, but looking back on it, it's like, why would you ever think that? Like you went through this crazy experience. Like that should be the last thing on your mind. But I mean, for being a female, and I'm sure a young girl, it's really difficult on yourself. Like you want to feel and look a certain way, and you're being betrayed by this body that is so super that it made it through all this stuff. Why can't it just stay this way to look a certain way, right? So yeah, I definitely can understand the whole reality that there's more than just the actual side effects that come from the chemo. There's mental side effects, there's emotional side effects, and then there's the physical, obviously, and the relationship side effects. And I think that's the problem, is that so many people are unaware of that greater side effect list, you know? And I think it's disappointing, but also exciting that we're getting an opportunity to express this to people, because it is really important. Like, for me, when I met my husband and I told him that I wanted to have children and he made that decision that we wanted to do that, then there was the extra side effects. Like, you know, I didn't know if I could have children. And I was kind of in limbo for about 10 years to know or not, because I didn't want to have children until I got married. It was just my personal preference.
There's so many things I want to pick up on, but going back to the body changes stuff, I think, again, for me, and it sounds like potentially for you as well, there's a difficulty with the way that your body is reacting, not only physically, but also how it's appearing based on the treatments. And then there's an added shame of even caring about that, right? So yes. It's like all of these expectations we're putting on ourselves, because I think that, like you're saying, I pretty much smiled. I mean, you know, I'm sure there was a few tears here and there, but I was strong through chemo. I smiled through it. I grinned and bared through it. I lost my hair. I gained weight, blah, blah, blah. Was in the hospital, had needles put in every part of my body, was rushed to the emergency, you know, all of that stuff. And I was, quote unquote, a great patient. After that, after I survived cancer, I mentally started to dissolve, I would say. I started to face those challenges. And I think part of it was because, yeah, like I was very, very ashamed of my body and the way it had shifted. That was when I, you know, started to be like, go into middle school. And that's when that stuff started to matter more. And everyone was like, oh my God, you survived cancer. You're so strong. That I didn't feel like I could reveal the emotional impact of it. And I also was confused because I was like, oh, I survived cancer. I shouldn't be sad. I shouldn't be scared. I shouldn't be depressed. I shouldn't be anxious.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely difficult. And I was thankful, like through my actual treatment itself, like I had a really great oncologist and she was a spirit animal. She did really well. She she had these awesome high heel shoes that she would always wear at every appointment. She was like a glamazon, I'll call her, because she was very tall, big, beautiful, red, curly hair. And every time she'd come down the hallway, you hear clicking with these heels, and they were always different, fun heels. But she really made me feel like I was a person, not just another patient. And a lot of my oncologists did that, actually. I think that's also something we wanted to make sure we get out there, was that, you know, for people, that's necessary. But she did help me humanize myself. Like once I finally showed some emotion through treatment and whatever, she did help me to feel okay about that part of it. But then, you know, she's guiding me through treatment. But like you said, when you get out of treatment, there's no guidance. There's no, how's it going? You're going to feel this way. You know, there's no, you might experience this mentally. You might experience this physically. There's the, your body's going to take some time to get back to normal physically afterwards, but there's no emotional and mental follow-up, you know? And that's one thing that I am really grateful for, the LLSD, is that they are really trying to help with that for a lot of people, because I think they're finally catching on that it doesn't end after treatment with a cancer diagnosis, right? It never will. I'm going on 13 years now, officially cancer-free, and I'm still dealing with stuff to this day. And I don't think it's ever going to end. And that's the sad reality. And sometimes I'll say, oh, my cancer doesn't define me. But the reality is it's a part of me. And I think the sooner that we can all recognize this and learn about it a bit more, then we can have these discussions and people won't feel so much shame about revealing that they're having a weakness moment, right? Then that 15-year-old girl doesn't have to feel so much hatred for herself because her body's not reacting the same way. Or this 27-year-old woman doesn't have to feel bad about herself because her body's doing this to her, right? So I think that's a big thing, is that we need to ensure that we're humanizing every aspect of cancer, even past treatment. It needs to happen. And I'm so grateful that the LSD is actually finally taking these steps to do this for people, because it's really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, I could not agree to every single word you said more. I amen. I think that, oh man, there's so many things I want to pull from everything that you say. I think one thing that it took me a really long time to understand was how this experience affected my sexuality.
Right.
And I think that speaks to the fact that our medical system is pretty fragmented and pretty specialized in nature, which, thank God for that. Neither of us would be sitting here speaking today if our medical system wasn't incredibly proficient at right. getting very technical, right?
Right.
However, in their zeal for, you know, specificity, they kind of can forget the holistic nature of a human. And we get so invested in the intricacies of the fact that we are dealing with a blood cancer that we forget that the blood is connected to the heart, to the brain, to the emotions. So the idea that something like a diagnosis of blood cancer when I'm 7 is going to affect really, truly every aspect of my life to this day, it was kind of lost, right? And I think something we're just still even trying to understand now. Uh-huh. But I think with the sexuality thing, tell me if this resonates. For me, what it comes down to is, I think the lack of autonomy I had over my body, thinking my body was bad or diseased, and sort of giving my body over to doctors for so long, to professionals, and the shame I felt around treatments, that like the idea of engaging in relationships was very difficult for me. And I also, I mean, you saying, you know, you're not normal sexually, I just want to get rid of that word, because what does right. that even mean anyway, right? So many women deal with their sexuality and deal with different issues. And I think, again, just as females, we feel shame about that in general, let alone with this on top of it.
Yeah. And I mean, it was hard. Like, so I met my husband, I finished treatment in December of 2008 and I met him in October of 2009. So, you know, I was going on 10 months roughly of being out of treatment. And when I met him, like, you know, it was kind of like this list I had to give him. Like, I can't always fully be in the mood and I need help to do this. And I have scars here because of this. And it was just like this whole shebang of information. It was really like a job interview for him. Are you ready to take on this responsibility? You know, and I think if we can prepare people for that, then at least it can help eliminate that a little bit.
You obviously had a very difficult treatment, and it mm-hmm. sounds like even post-treatment to this day. Maybe you can describe what your life is like right now. I mean, I know you had issues with fertility. Like, how is that going now?
Well, I have a 3-year-old daughter. So Yay! Thankfully, yes. You know, it was hard. As soon as we finished treatment, we immediately put me back on birth control to help with ovulation. So we didn't really know what was going to happen. And for 10 years, it was kind of like, oh my gosh, are we going to have a kid? Are we not? Like, I really, really want this. And like, when we were actually ready to try, it was like, okay, like we have to face the reality that we may not get pregnant. We may have to go through, you know, fertility options. We might have to look into all these different avenues, but you know, we just kind of put it out there, like, let's just try first and see what happens. And thankfully for me, there was no issues. I got pregnant within 3 months of stopping my birth control. So that was wonderful. It was really great. But I know a lot of women do have issues and it's hard. And I wish that there were more options available to them, in the sense of like someone like me at 23, I didn't have the financial ability to save embryos for the chance that if I could or could not have kids down the road. I don't know if it's still like that for people who are diagnosed with cancer, but that was what it was like at the time when I was diagnosed. So I wish that there were options for people who have done nothing to themselves to get into this position, who didn't make a decision to do this, that there was more help for them to get that option down the road if that's something they want to do, right? Because to be told that you, at that time, that you can only have children if you freeze eggs, if you don't work naturally, but it's going to cost you this much, that's really difficult to swallow. Like, so basically you're putting a dollar amount on the quality of my life down the road for something that I have no control over. That was a real kick in the face to me, you know, and it really sucked. So I'm glad that nature worked the way it did, because my 3-year-old daughter, I'm so blessed to have her. She's my miracle baby. I call her that, even though really it wasn't anything, you know, wrong, but I may not have had her. So that part was hard. Physically, right now, I still have, like I said, I have dryness issues. I go through side effects. Like, I have neuropathy, I believe it's what it's called, when you have nerve damage from one of the chemo drugs that I have. So I can't feel my fingertips. I can't feel my toes. I don't feel my shins. They all feel like pins and needles 24/7. I can't feel hot and cold temperatures on my pads and my fingers all the time. And that's just something, unfortunately, I'm going to live with for the rest of my life. There's no cure for it. And little things like, I swear to this day, I still have chemo brain. Honestly, I can have a really intellectual conversation with someone, and then like 5 minutes in, it's happened here. I'm like, is that what I'm talking about? Like, is this relevant to what you asked me? You know, I go very confused all of a sudden, and it's hard because I read about it, and chemo brain is supposed to be something that you're only suffering through treatment, right? But here I am going on 13 years and I still have it. And, you know, again, I don't think that that's ever going to go away. So now I can chalk it up to being a mom and say, I just have mommy brain. But, you know, like prior to that, I was like, well, what's going on? So little things like that still happen.
I think that you're pointing to, first of all, just again, what we were speaking about, even from the beginning of like the burden that's placed on us, not only it's when you receive a cancer diagnosis, you are faced with all kinds of questions, financial, mental, emotional, about your life. And there's no guidebook to figure out how to navigate that. And especially at such a young age, you know, and with such a rare case like yours, when it was just came out of nowhere, and to be faced with that and to be so resilient and strong and to be dedicating your life to helping others through it. I mean, it's just really, really inspirational.
Well, thank you. I mean, to be honest, my message that I want people to know is like, you know, clearly you're not alone. We all go through it on some degree. I mean, yeah, everyone else's symptoms is going to be different than everyone else's. Thankfully, I have been in remission, and hopefully nowhere in sight is it going to return. But, you know, I know there are others that have it come back, and you're still not alone. You know, just because I'm 12 years out, I still remember it like it was yesterday, and I don't think I'll ever forget it. And it's what it is. But my biggest takeaway from all this is that I think that we just need to keep communicating about it, spread the word about everything. And then eventually the stigmatism, the underlying shame and guilt and burdenism that is created by a diagnosis will all start to slowly disappear, you know, and it's not going to be so necessarily difficult to guide your way through. And it has to start somewhere, right? Like, someone has to start helping others. And while there's wonderful organizations that do it, it's those individuals that come out of those organizations that go, okay, well, let's take it this way now, because you guys have done it so great up to here, but now this is where we're missing, and let's keep going with it and go further. So, you know, like the symptoms, like I was saying before, is that it's more than just the treatment. It's everything, emotional, physical. And to touch back, like, right now, emotionally, my biggest thing is that, unfortunately, every day I do still live in fear that my cancer will return. Especially now that I've had a kid. It scares me every day that I'm going to get sick again and leave her. Sorry. Or the biggest one is that I'm going to pass it to her. You know, that it's going to be something that she'll genetically develop, because you just don't know, right? So that part of it, I wasn't prepared for that. And I don't know necessarily if that will ever, anyone will ever be prepared for that, but that is the biggest emotional side effect from my cancer diagnosis, is knowing that there is a possibility that it could potentially come back and or affect other people that you care about again, or develop in that person that you care about. So I don't let it ruin my life. Like, it doesn't ruin my life, but it is definitely in the back of my mind consistently every day. And that is the most difficult one to deal with.
So. Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing. I mean, I think that it's so clear to you how precious life is, you know? And I think that that's a lesson that not many people really come to until much later, you know? I think it's such a hard pill to swallow, but I just keep thinking about the autonomy and the control that feels like it's taken away at that moment, and how we can continue. I mean, this, I think the word cure is a little bit, it's maybe it doesn't encompass what it's like to go through this. It's an ongoing journey. It's an ongoing journey for everyone. And that's what I've come to realize. As different as I felt, I think we can feel going from that hospital room to the quote unquote normal world, the older I get, the more I recognize that our struggles as human beings are different, but everyone has a story to tell, you know? And everyone has struggles, and it's really about how you face them. And, you know, you're such an inspiration, truly, just the way that you live your life. And I think that I hope that you're proud of that. And, you know, the way that you mother your child and just who you are as a person is more than enough. And I think we need to abolish this word normal, because it's just not, it doesn't exist, right?
Yeah. And I, you know, right now in our time when people are like, oh, the new normal, it's like, I am not ready to go through a new normal again. You know, like the thing I always tell people is like, when you get diagnosed with cancer, your identity is all of a sudden gone. Like, you have to mourn the reality that you are no longer who you were before. And then all of a sudden you develop this new personality. I'm a survivor, or I'm a cancer patient, sorry. And then if you survive it, it's, oh, that reality, that identity you just developed, that's gone now too. You know, now you're a survivor, and this is your new normal. And so when this COVID-19 stuff started happening, I was like, oh my gosh, like, not again, please. Like, I can't handle this anymore. But I agree. I think we have to get rid of the word normal to this whole scenario, because nothing is normal about a cancer diagnosis. Like, even though your cancer was different than my cancer and that we experienced similar things, it's not normal, you know? Normal is cancer-free, birth to death, no issues except for like colds and flus and so on and so forth. That's normal. What we go through from the point of diagnosis till forever, that's never going to be normal. But that's okay. That's the thing. I think that everyone needs to know that that's okay, that it's not going to be normal. Every feeling, every experience, every doctor's appointment or question that develops from everything, it's okay that that happens. And I think when we try to put normal on it, that's just our band-aid of going, it's okay, let's not deal with it. Let's just say that that's what it is, so that we can just put the blanket and be okay and move on with life, right? So I think that we have to break out of that and create the feeling that it's okay. Not normal, but it's okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, normal's boring.
It is.
Right? It really, I mean, is. I think at 31 years old, I finally have gotten to the point where I've spent most of my life trying desperately to be what I thought normal was. And I'm finally at the point where I'm like, that's just not what I am or what I want to be. Or maybe honestly, it doesn't even exist in the first place. And
right,
we're in this constant evolution, you know, and you are exceptional. Like, I'm sorry, Samantha, you are not normal. You are an exceptional person.
Well, thank you. So are you.
Yes. And I just want to thank you so much for taking this time to talk to me today. I really appreciate it. And I know our listeners will as well. If listeners have any questions about caregiving for someone with a blood cancer or need support navigating your experience, I encourage you to connect with the community services manager in your region. Visit bloodcancers.ca to connect with us. Thank you, TELUS Friendly Future Foundation, for generously sponsoring today's episode. Until next time, stay well.
Thank you for listening to the Blood Cancer Experience podcast series by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. You can find us wherever you access your favorite podcasts, so be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. If you have a great idea for the show, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments or suggestions at canadainfo@lls.org. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada is dedicated to funding cutting-edge research and supporting people affected by blood cancers. To learn more and access resources, including fact sheets, booklets, and webcasts, visit bloodcancers.ca.